your heart pounding in my ear. Now I feel the sound, and the time is near. I feel the taste of all the things you do. Now the time has come, I know your dream come true.
When you didn't get that call, did you feel angry, frustrated, or did you just kind of shrug your shoulders after a while?
What are you going to do? I think the first year or two, I was really upset.
Did you feel vindicated when you did get the call?
I don't think it's vindication. I wouldn't look at it that in those terms. It's just it happens when it happens, and honored to be there for the rest of time.
Eric Lindros is a Hall of Famer. Does that please you?
Yeah, he deserves it. I think if you... It's an interesting thing. There's no standards to get into our Hall of Fame, but he was MVP in the league, so that should be a pretty big step towards getting into the Hall of Fame, I think. And he had probably a half a dozen years where he was the best player in the game, by far the best. So I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Because a lot of people thought that you were helping to keep him out. Is that fair?
No, that's not fair. Yeah. I would never, ever. I had some battles with him. And I don't think I was wrong, but I guess I was 50% wrong and he was 50% wrong, but it doesn't really matter. Going into the Hall of Fame is where I felt that he deserved to be.
I had so much fun talking to Bobby Clark, along with Pete Mihaljevic, on September the 1st in studio. The news had been announced about Eric Lindros, and tonight's the night in Toronto, and there he was sitting down with James Duthie on TSN. Melnick in the afternoon with Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo. Let's go to the Hockey Hall of Fame right now. Do we have an introduction for Mr. Farber?
Michael Farber on Melnick in the afternoon, brought to you by Wrangler's premium performance cool vantage jeans. Don't sweat the job. Do like Carey Price. Choose Wrangler's cool vantage jeans to be cool and stay cool.
Award-winning writer and broadcaster, and of course, member of the Hockey Hall of Fame committee. How you doing, Michael?
I'm well. One of 18 members. Bob Clark is one. I'm one, so you can credit us or blame us, but we have some compadres there.
No, this is a good class. But as you can tell by my questioning of Bobby there, every year I try to get inside there, the inner sanctum, to try to, who do I pick on for this guy not being in yet, or that person, or whatever. But no, this is a good class. I don't know if anybody, people, I guess, sometimes tend to forget it is not the National Hockey League Hall of Fame, so they'll roll their eyes when a guy like Makarov goes in or when a woman goes in, but this is a good class.
Well, one thing we have to make clear is if a woman goes in, she's not taking a spot away from a man. People get confused by that. Maybe the Hall of Fame hasn't done a good enough job explaining it, but there are separate categories. Both honored members, but separate categories. But Eric Lindros is one of these players who's a Rorschach test. He demands a response. You have to see something there. You can't be indifferent to Eric Lindros, good or bad. And I remember the first time I saw him play, and it was the Canada Cup training camp in August of 1991 at Maple Leaf Gardens. And as so often happens in hockey, for reasons that really escape me, training camps of all sorts begin with scrimmages. No drills, scrimmages. Boom. So it's 9 in the morning, late August of 91, and the puck is dropped, and it goes back to Al MacInnis, and boom, Eric Lindros, 18 years old, hits MacInnis. And we're not too far past Halloween. You know how those skeletons kind of collapse? Well, that was Al MacInnis, who's not a small man.
Yeah.
And everyone who wasn't quite awake when it started was awake about 5 seconds into the scrimmage, because Eric Lindros, to quote Tim Robbins and Bull Durham, announced himself with authority.
Now, there was a lot of animosity for obvious reasons here in Quebec. But outside of Quebec or Philadelphia or Toronto, I mean, were people not like him? And if so, why not?
Well, he was the biggest kid. He was the biggest kid, the strongest kid, and, who likes the overdog? If you go back to the history of junior hockey in Canada, starting with Bobby Orr, there have been 7 great players. And Lindros was the one who got the most attention because he was entering the game at a time when there were now sports radio stations and when the game really was taking off, at a time when Toronto, despite a dearth of Stanley Cups, at least not recent Stanley Cups, was becoming kind of the center of the hockey universe. It was no longer Montreal. And so people were talking about it more. And Lindros had been identified early on, and even more than Crosby or McDavid or anyone who succeeded him, he was the junior player that everybody knew.
Without, again, revealing something you don't want to, but I don't know, you are a member of the committee, you've been part of it for so long, so let me ask you just if you're able to answer. On a personal level, when you're deciding, if you don't have an immediate yes, slam dunk, this guy's a Hall of Famer, you've got to give it a little more thought, does something like the Hart Trophy mean more than being part of a Stanley Cup, or is it all part of the same equation, or what?
Well, it probably does for me. How many Stanley Cups did Rick Chartrand win? Not a Hall of Famer. It's an individual award. This is an individual honor. If you play for a team and that wins cups, it probably smiles on you a little bit. Let me give you a little bit of the way that I view this. If you are player X, and I can write the history of your time in hockey, the NHL or international hockey, and without mentioning you, without your playing a prominent part, then you're probably not a Hall of Famer. But if I'm writing that chapter of your time, and you play a significant role, that you were a dominant player who needed to be talked about, you weren't one of the and guys, so-and-so, and, oh, yeah, he was also on that team and put up good numbers, but you were a prominent guy, there's a very good chance you are a Hall of Famer.
There you go. Do you like that? That's a pretty good rule of thumb. And look, for those 8 years in Philadelphia, Eric Lindros was a Hall of Famer. And unfortunately, what happens in every sport is that you see a guy towards the tail end of his career, whether because, like in Lindros's case, it's because of injury, or somebody just hangs around like a Goose Gossage and his role is redefined, but he's still somewhat effective, but not a Hall of Fame status. People tend to remember that, and they go, he spent the last 4 years, he wasn't that great. But man, for eight years in Philly, he was sensational.
He was a dominant player. His Hart Trophy came in a lockout year. It was a 48-game season that year, just like P.K. Subban's Norris Trophy came in a truncated season.
Let me remind people.
I don't know how you weigh that in, but there are some pretty smart people in that room, excluding me. I mean, there's Scotty Bowman. There's Anders Hedberg. There's David Poyle, Colin Campbell. I mean, there are bright, bright people, and we don't always see things the same way.
Wait a minute. Did you say Colin Campbell and bright? I'm sorry. That was just
okay. 46. Yeah, you can be nasty. That's your job.
Yeah, 46 game. Well, we have proof of this. I don't just go flying off the handle. But it's important that you point that out. That lockout year, in 46 games, he scored 29 goals and 70 points.
Yeah. And he played with some pretty good players, including John LeClair. You know, I remember writing about Serge Savard after the deal that my buddy Serge still knew how to build a championship team. Unfortunately, he was doing it in Philadelphia.
Michael Farber on site. So is there a dinner at 6 o'clock, or what's going on?
No, they let us into the hall, and there's a little reception areas, and then we march in later into the great hall where some of us, where we get to sit up and listen to the speeches. So it's a pretty cool thing, and I'm honored to have been part of it for about 10 years now. And just so people know how this works, you're appointed for a three-year term, and it's renewable five times, so a maximum of 15 years. And sometimes I'm asked, well, why did so-and-so get into the Hall of Fame now and not when it was earlier? You know, Pat Burns didn't coach another game, or Eric Lindros didn't play another game. And what I need to remind people is that the makeup of the Hall changes. There are different people who come in as voters, and maybe they see things a little bit differently than people have in the past. So it may not be a perfect explanation, but it's an explanation.
We discussed Rogie Vachon earlier. We've also talked with Pierre about Sergei Makarov and of course, Pat Quinn. And Pat Quinn was a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame committee as well. So I know you got to know him pretty well. What would you like to add about Pat Quinn that maybe people listening aren't aware of?
I didn't always have a great relationship with Pat. He was angry. He stayed angry with people. He was angry with referees and linesmen ever since Leon Stickles' offside call or non-call in the 1980 Stanley Cup Final. And in 2002, I did a story in Sports Illustrated, Why Everybody Hates the Leafs. They were the most detestable team in hockey because Pat was a ref baiter. They had Corson, they had Tucker. Ex-Canadians who were chippy players. It was, and Pat never really forgave me for that story. But, you know, I'd see him every year at the Hall, and, you know, we could have a discussion, because even if he bore you ill will for some slight at some point, and Pat had been the coach of that team, he could work things out. He was a man who had a generosity of spirit, and that's what I liked about Pat.
He did what he did, and he loved what he did, and he just wanted everybody to love the game as much as he did. He saw great satisfaction in teaching the players and teaching his coworkers about the game and how he saw it, and he loved to see them execute it.
There's his daughter, Callie. Just before we let you go and enjoy yourself tonight, Renny Fossil was with Connor McKenna, Sean Starr, and Rick Moffitt this morning.
But on the other side, for the product of the winter sport, it's a must. Can you imagine having a hockey tournament without the NHL in Pyeongchang? You know, we are very small. Actually, the winter sports are not as big. So having the best on best in ice hockey, it's a special thing. I would say it's the cherry on the cake to have hockey in the Winter Games. And there is a value there for sure.
The head of the International Ice Hockey Federation, of course, and Gary Bettman has gone on record as saying, we got to tie this up one way or the other by January the latest. Can you read the tea leaves here?
Yeah, I've been very optimistic right from the start. I've kind of swum upstream there, but it just seemed there's a deal to be made. You know, we had Olympic hockey for a long time before the pros went there. I covered 80. I covered 84 and 88 and 92 and 94. Five games without NHL players. We had the Miracle on Ice. We had Peter Forsberg's postage stamp goal. We had some memorable moments. But starting with Dominik Hasek in Nagano for the Czech Republic, it truly has been special. And I'd love to see the pros go back. More importantly, the players do want to go back. I am reasonably certain it's going to happen.
Well, it's if the puck comes to a dead stop, and the interpretation of a stop on the play, and it's been kind of difficult for goaltenders to play that. So the interpretation of the puck stops dead. No goal, dead play. That's interpretation. And the hard part is interpreting the puck stopping, and it will be interpreted by video review.
Yeah. Not everybody's brilliant on the
hockey. Hey, wait a minute.
Today.
I had lunch with Bill McCreary today, and I put forth my great proposal. Get rid of incidental contact. Goal, if it's not a goal, it's a penalty. One way or another, nothing wishy-washy. And he looked at me and says, yeah, not bad. So there you go.
Oh, okay. Michael Farber, rule changer, Hockey Hall of Fame Committee, award-winning writer and broadcaster. Enjoy the night, Michael.
Yeah, and I'll see you Friday night.
Yes, sir. We will be at Expos Fest on Friday night in Laval. So just before Mitch Gallagher gets up to take a walk, outfielder Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion have declined the Blue Jays' qualifying offers of $17.2 million. They are now officially free agents. Are they gone?
I think they're gone. I think the signing of Morales Kendrick Morales meant that Encarnacion was as good as gone, and I don't think Bautista was ever really in their plans. Now, with Encarnacion, I think the funniest thing is that it appears as though everyone thought that the best fit was going to be with the Red Sox. But all reports
say... Because of what Big Papi said.
Big Papi said, and he'd be the perfect replacement at DH, and he could play a little first base as well. Apparently, they're not having any discussions. Apparently, the Red Sox are not that interested in Encarnacion. So where he goes, I don't know, but it does look like both those guys will not be with the Blue Jays next year.
Could you not see I'm not saying this is going to happen, but could you not see Bautista in particular, since he was banged up and his numbers weren't great? He goes to market, he sees the market isn't what he thinks it should be, and goes back to Toronto on a one-year deal.
It could be. I just feel as though the Blue Jays management doesn't want to spend
on.
Money.
Then they want to move on. Yeah, and then they'll become likable to Mitch Gallo. When we come back, Robin Black of the Fight Network on Conor McGregor and more on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690.
CTV News. After years of delays, ex-Montreal Mayor Michael Applebaum was in court today, facing 14 charges, including fraud and conspiracy. We'll have that story at 6.